to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners, welcoming you to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. I offer my loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. And if you tune in to Thursday Live a little earlier today, it's not my first greeting of the day. For this morning, a Morning Glory segment, we had a special feature with a few of us Thursday Live hosts to commemorate the fifth year of our live broadcast. And that also explains why we're starting late the Answering Booth, because we were so carried away, I guess. We all spoke so much, and the Morning Glory segment extended a little more than usual. So we are here. We are the Answering Booth program, a little starting a little late. So let me take a moment to thank all of you for the reception this show, the Answering Booth, has got. And as I mentioned in the morning, this show, the Answering Booth, is a little more special to me, and I could not have had such a fulfilling experience if not for all those who sent me questions, mails of appreciation and gratitude, and constructive criticism and suggestions. So heartfelt thank you, to the Swami in each one of you. With that, let's take a plunge into this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. As always, before we head to the question of the week, permit me to share with you another interesting quote that I came by. This is one more quote from the American writer James Truslow Adams, and I quote, "Seek out that particular mental attribute which makes you feel most deeply and vitally alive, along with which comes the inner voice which says, this is the real me. And when you have found that attitude, follow it." End of quote. Well, I don't know if the writer here is referring to the conscience. I feel he's talking about those attributes that make us what we really are, our essential unique personality. Most often we live in the society and literally draw all our characteristics and attributes from people around. I wouldn't say that is wrong or even completely avoidable, but I feel if we can remember, there is something within us which is untouched from the outside. A nature, when followed, makes us feel, as I said in the quote, vitally alive. As many times as we follow that nature, the more our actions would be spontaneous and the more they will give us joy. Many times when in a situation or dilemma, we deliberate so much, we ask people around, we philosophize endlessly, but maybe what's necessary is just to do what you feel deeply within. Some people ask, what should be our response when we see someone in need? Should we think it is their karma and move on? Should we help? Or when in a situation you wish to speak up, then you smother that restlessness by philosophizing. Sometimes I wonder, is it really necessary? The restlessness within, the spontaneous compassion, that empathetic pain that you feel within, the childishness, maybe these are just meant to be followed sometimes and expressed uninhibitably. But even as we do that, we must remember the others around need not necessarily react the same way. Just because they don't feel or think the same way, it is not necessary they are wrong. Follow your uniqueness, but at the same time, embrace the uniqueness of those around too. Well, before we move on with the program, let me read the quote of James Truslow Adams one more time. Seek out that particular mental attribute which makes you feel most deeply and vitally alive, along with which comes the inner voice which says, this is the real me. And when you have found that attitude, follow it. All right then, well, let's head to this week's question. This week I have a question from a brother who wishes to be anonymous, but he has sent a question which I guess a lot of people will be able to relate to. Sorry. I had Brother Ganesh who's recorded the question for us. So let's first listen to the question and then we'll go ahead with the answer to that question.
Sairam, dear Brother Prem, I am writing this email with deep regret. I have always been inspired by genuine Sai devotees and Sai students, and for many years have been yearning to be one. In my effort to be an individual eligible to be even considered an instrument in Sai Seva, I have made millions of promises to our beloved Swami. Every time I have made a promise, hoping to keep up my word and be a true devotee, I have managed to find a loophole in my promise and break it. I feel sad. I have not kept my word. And Swami has been with me every moment despite all this and has guided me with strong messages as and when I have deviated from this path. I at times have taken pride of moments where I have strongly felt His experiences and messages for me. Despite being sure it was Him guiding me, in reality, I have not followed His words. I have made millions of efforts to correct myself and be an instrument at His feet. I know I am writing this email as one more attempt at promising to be a better human being. I fear tomorrow I will break it again and get immersed in this materialistic world seeking pleasure. I am young, 32 years old, and want to really dedicate myself to Swami and be His true instrument, one He can be proud of. All I am seeking from you is to know if there is a way I can stop this deception and keep up my word. Can I control my mind? Does Swami still love me? Do you think I will succeed in being a better human being? Days have passed, weeks have passed, months have passed, years also have passed, decades have passed. If not now, then when? I fear. Regards, an aspirant.
Thank you, brother, for that question, and thank you, Brother Ganesh, for reading it out so beautifully for us. I would probably say that, you know, that question created so much of a sense of deja vu in me, and I'm sure to a lot of other devotees and students, because it's a very common feeling. I'm sure a lot of people who came to Swami feel like this. Before I say anything else, before I try to answer the many questions that were posed in that particular email, I will answer this question first. Does Swami love you? Well, of course, Swami's love does not depend on who you are. Swami's love does not depend on your nature. And one thing which I always say is, Swami always wanted us to love all, right? And that was Swami's primary message. He said, love all, serve all. Then don't you think that Swami would love all? And of course He does. And it doesn't matter whether we follow Him, we don't follow Him, we are good, we are bad, we are right, we are wrong. The flaws in us, the number of times that we fail, all of this does not matter. Swami definitely loves us. But having said that, for a devotee, it is absolutely not wrong to strive for God's love. I know this sounds a little contradictory. You say that God always loves you, but you're striving for God's love. The difference is, when we as devotees, when we were as students striving for Swami's love, what we were actually striving for was that the love that we were receiving from Swami should result in a certain form of transformation within us. And when that was not happening, that was when we felt a little disappointed and despondent, right? So what we really are seeking for is not Swami's love, because Swami's love, as Swami would Himself say, it is like the sunshine, or it's like the rain, which is everything. But what we are seeking for is that love should make a difference in my life. And that's where our efforts come in. That's where our approach towards Swami becomes important. So it is not wrong to strive for Swami's love, but always keep this in the back of your mind, that Swami does not love us based on what we are, or what we're doing right, or what we're doing wrong. But Swami would also say that when Swami would withdraw Himself, would not talk to us, would maintain silence and would avoid us completely. At such times, Swami would say that, see, when I tell you something and when you do not follow it, that accrues to a lot of discredit for you. You know, it could become very harmful to you when I say something and you don't follow it. So sometimes I stop saying what I have to say to literally save you from the, if I could say, sin of disobeying Swami. So what we can clearly understand is when Swami speaks, it is out of His love. When Swami does not speak, it's out of His love. Swami's silence is out of His love. Swami's anger is also out of His love. So it is not that we do not have Swami's love. Swami's love is there. All our effort is so that we bring this change within, so that we are able to capitalize on this Swami's love that we have been so fortunate to be, fortunate to chance upon, right? So it's not wrong to strive for God's love, but always keep in mind that Swami's love is always there, but this striving will help you progress forward, right? And that's the real speciality of Swami's love. I think I recall narrating one beautiful incident as part of this program about a doctor who was addicted to the habit of taking morphine injections, and how he had literally been, and the title of that article was from the jaws of the crocodile's, from the grip of the crocodile's jaw or something like that, because that's how badly he was entrenched in that habit, and how Swami helped him come out of that. And at that time I mentioned this, you know, that is the speciality of Swami's love. Let's say today you come and ask me for an advice and I give you an advice and you don't follow it. Tomorrow you again come to me and ask me for an advice and again I give it to you, you don't follow it. 3-4 times my patience will run dry, because I will get upset that I'm telling you something and you're not following it, right? But with Swami it is not like that. If you fall 100 times and for the 101st time if you call out to Swami, be sure that if that call is sincere, Swami will be by your side. He will not see that I came to you 100 times and you did not follow, so I will not come to you the 101st time. That is not the nature of Swami's love. That's the nature of our love and affection, but that's not the nature of Swami's love, right? Now, having said that, what is it that we need to do in the situation that you've come up with? I started off by saying that this is a very common thing in the life of a lot of our students and devotees. I'll tell you how that is exactly true, you know, because I've been through it myself as a student. Most of our students, when we come to Swami, we come from pretty decent families, good families, which don't have bad habits. A lot of my classmates came without any bad habits of, you know, the regular addictions that you would see in youngsters these days. And once we come into the hostel, we don't have any scope for indulging in any bad habits. So typically we are pretty much good children in that sense. We were having a certain amount of goodness. But what would happen is, when we start looking at ourselves in the light of Swami's expectations, in the light of the idealism that Swami stands for, then suddenly we will see that in this personality which we till then thought was good, we suddenly see so many flaws. We see that so many shortcomings are there inherent in this personality. And the first reaction to that is always enormous guilt. Enormous guilt. And it's not necessary that this will happen as soon as you come to Swami. For some of us, it happened when we came to Swami and when we started listening to Swami's discourses. For some people, it comes towards the end of their student career, when they suddenly realize that, oh God, I've wasted so many years, and they start introspecting. For many people, it comes after they graduate from the university. And so this I always say that this guilt that you feel, that this self-criticism that arises, is pretty much the first step in this journey of transformation, right? That we have to keep in mind. So in that sense, it is not wrong what you're going through. It is a very much part of the progress that you need to make, right? So this guilt is right, but at the same time, this guilt is actually born out of an absence of a spiritual understanding of our own personalities and of our own nature. I'll probably leave that for later. I'll come to that, the later part of the answer, and I'll also tell you why I'm coming to the later part of the answer, right? But one more point before moving ahead I'd like to say is, when this period happens, when you come to Swami, you suddenly start looking at yourself in the light of Swami's expectations, then you feel that there are so many flaws, then you start feeling guilty. One thing that Swami would often say is that don't carry your past along. Right? It is, don't look at what you were before you came to Swami, before you exposed to Swami's message and say that, oh, I was bad in all these years, and I'm in that way I'm a sinner and things like that. Swami would often say that, you know, leave the past behind. A very beautiful incident that I recall is that narrated by one of our senior in the university. This person was getting a lot of attention from Swami. Swami started speaking to him. And apparently one day when he walked in to the interview room, Swami had called him. It was a habit that he would always go to Swami's presence before Swami came out for darshan. So one day when he walked in, he found that Swami was very angry. Swami was holding a letter in his hand and Swami looked very upset. And as he went and sat in front of Swami, Swami said, you know what I'm holding in my hand? It's a letter of complaint against you. And Swami went on to say that some students and even some teachers and the warden have written that this boy is so talkative, he's so indisciplined, he used to do all of these things in the hostel and before he joined Swami's college, and Swami is giving so much attention to him, right? And I really don't know if that letter really had all those contents, but Swami usually uses these opportunities to drive lessons home. So this is what all Swami was telling, and Swami apparently looked visibly upset. So this boy sank to his knees and he started sobbing. He started crying and crying and crying. And he held on to Swami's hand and he said, Swami, all of this is true. I really don't deserve to be loved by you. I don't really deserve to be spoken to by you. And he broke down. And immediately he said, Swami melted like butter. You know, Swami held him. Swami embraced him and put his head to his chest and started consoling him. And then something which Swami said was very, very profound and very beautiful. Swami said, see, when you were a little child, when you were a toddler, you used to run around without clothes, isn't it? So this boy thought for some time and said, yes, Swami, I must have. I mean, all children do that. Then Swami said, will you do that now? And he said, no, Swami, now I would definitely not do that. Swami said, why is that so? Swami explained that when you were a child, that nature of running around without any shame, without any clothes on, was a natural behavior for that age. But even as you grew up, when you knew that this is not the right behavior in the society, you changed yourself and today you would not do that. Do you feel guilty for running around naked when you were a 10-year-old, when you were a 5 or 3-year-old? He said, no, Swami. Swami said, similarly, don't be guilty for what you were before you were exposed to Swami's message. I am only interested in, after I have started speaking to you, how is your behavior now? I know the question that this brother has asked here is about him not being able to follow what he wants to, what Swami wants him to now. But sometimes when we get into this mode of self-criticism and, you know, we're looking at ourselves in low light, we tend to bring in all of these things which are also in the past. So as much as possible, try to leave behind what is in the past, only concentrate on your current efforts, right? That is what is important. So, now why do we go through this period of pain and guilt? And how do we deal with that? That's the question. See, this is a phase of transformation, as I said, because you suddenly see yourself in the light of Swami's expectations and you find that there are so many gaping errors. But at the same time, this is a lack of spiritual perspective where earlier your ego was attached to a personality which appeared good. You know, I'm a good boy, I'm a good person, I'm a very loving person. And now when you suddenly see yourself in this new light, now your ego attaches yourself to this person filled with flaws and shortcomings. So this is nothing but an extension of your ego claiming goodness earlier and now something which is not acceptable or something which is unpleasant, right? But at the same time, this gives rise to a certain kind of anger against yourself. And sometimes when Swami is talking to students, Swami would say that this anger which arises towards your own self, when you're not able to follow Swami's words, when you're unhappy with yourself, that you're not able to live up to Swami's expectations or be good, Swami would refer to that anger as sattvic anger or pure anger. Anger, as we all know, is one of the 6 enemies, and Swami would always say that you have to keep away from that, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mad, matsarya, where anger is the 2nd enemy in that list. But nevertheless, Swami would say that this anger is sattvic anger. And it is also similar to the anger sometimes when we see something wrong in society, when we see somebody being treated unfairly. It might not happen directly to us, but someone else being treated unfairly. you feel a little bit of anger and you feel very upset about it, some will say that is sattvic anger because it is selfless anger, right? And in this case, when you feel anger towards yourself, it is an anger born out of devotion. It's an anger born out of your love for Swami. So that is sattvic anger and it is actually good. And if it can be used properly, if it can be harnessed properly, it can lead to your progress, right? So though anger is wrong, though anger is born out of ego, this anger is good and more importantly, it must be used well. So as long as this anger leads to something constructive, as long as it leads you to transform yourself, it is good. And this anger should make you strive harder and it should not make you give up. If you get angry with yourself and become hopeless, if you get angry with yourself and become negative about yourself, then this no more remains sattvic anger. If this anger has to remain sattvic, if it has to remain pure, this anger should be used for you to transform yourself and not give up. And every time you have a fall, to get up and walk in the right direction. And then you are using the anger in the right manner, right? The other thing is, you know, most of the time we tend to define ourselves with where we are standing at that moment. But what really defines us, especially when you're on the spiritual path, is actually the direction in which you're heading and not necessarily where you are. Because one of the reasons is none of us really know where we are. Sometimes we might be much lower than where we think we are. Sometimes we might be much ahead of where we think we are. So we really don't have the relative idea of our position. That's why it's more important to concentrate on the direction we are heading. I always say this, you know, let's say that I'm in Puttaparthi today and I'm traveling towards Bangalore. I take a cab from the ashram and even as I'm driving out of the Gopuram gate, somebody calls me up and they ask me, where are you? I tell them I'm going to Bangalore. So let's see, about 15-20 minutes later, I'm near the super specialty hospital and somebody calls me and they say, where are you? And I'm in a cab, I'm going towards Bangalore. And probably 2 hours later, I'm near the airport and somebody calls me, I'll again give the same reply. The point I'm trying to make is, the position where I was in different stages of this journey were different, but the answer that I gave was that I'm heading towards Bangalore. Because that is what defined the activity I was doing then. Not where I was. Where I was is an added information, but what I am doing is defined by the direction in which I'm heading. So similarly, we tend to relate ourselves with our failings. We tend to relate ourselves with the mistakes that we do. But I think what is more important is we should be able to relate ourselves and define ourselves by the direction in which we are heading. Every time you do a mistake when you get up, if you feel that it is a mistake, I shouldn't do that, actually you are in the right direction and that should define your path more than the mistake itself. And Swami would often say this. Swami would say that I am Bhava Priya and I am not Bahya Priya, which means I am pleased and I look for the feeling and not for the external, right? So the feeling is what is most important and that is something which is within our control. I'm not saying that you can endlessly make mistakes, you can endlessly fall and it's okay. But the sincere repentance which comes after every fall, we don't realize that it really defines our path and defines our journey much more than the fall and the mistakes that we make. So at all times, try to protect that feeling that you want to obey Swami. I always say this on this program, you know, the questions that you ask, that what would Swami want me to do in this situation, that question is far more important than the answer itself. The answer may be different depending on your spiritual progress or depending on the person whom you're asking it to. But this question of what would Swami want me to do is far more important because that defines the feeling with which the approach is being taken. Same is the case with, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you've fallen, how many times you've broken the promise. Of course, I'm not saying that it is absolutely immaterial. If you're feeling guilty about that, it is good because that guilt is going to help you progress. But at the same time, what really defines your journey is the feeling with which you stand up every time you fall. Every time you fail, you stand up and say, no, this was wrong, I need to head in this direction. That defines you as a person. That defines your journey more than the fact that you have failed. Because when you have failed, if you say that, no, I give up, isn't it that you're a person who has given up? Isn't that the definition of your journey? So how can the failing be the definition? It is what you do after you have failed. It is what you do after you have broken a promise. So every time can you get up and say that, no, I've done this wrong. I need to head in the right direction. So protect that feeling, because it is that feeling that's more important to Swami, right? Now, coming back to the point of what I mentioned, that this is primarily a flaw in our spiritual perspective, right? The reason why I'm telling that is, the ego attached itself to the personality being good sometime back, and the ego is now attaching itself to somebody which is unpleasant, which is someone who's not living up to your own expectations now when you start looking at yourself in the light of Swami's expectations. So in both these places, it is the ego which is actually being played out. So in that sense, this is not a spiritual progress, but this is a progress which happens below the spiritual understanding, if I could put it that way. It's a transformation, right? And when you talk about transformation, you change from one person to the other. It is a change from A to B, right? But spirituality is about what Swami would say, purification. And when you say purification, you don't become from one to another, but you become from something which is impure. You start removing what is not yours, and then you become what you really are. So it is actually a little different in that sense. But without this transformation process, you cannot come to the purification process. So this transformation is important, but again, this is still being born out of a misunderstanding of spirituality itself. So what do you do about that? And this generally, Swami will not stress too much in public discourses, because it can be completely misunderstood. You know, the moment you say somebody is doing a crime or somebody is doing something wrong, you tell them, no, it's okay, because you're not the one who is doing it, you're very pure. There is a chance of it being misconstrued, it's a chance of being misinterpreted. So Swami will not stress this much when he's talking in public, but when Swami starts speaking in private, Swami would always emphasize this point. So yes, we have to take responsibility for the mistakes that we do. We have to take responsibility for the flaws that are inherent in us. But also at the same time, we need to balance it with the idea that I am not this mind which is having all these flaws. It is because we completely relate to this mind, saying, I am this mind, this is my mind, so this mind has all these flaws, this mind has all of these mistakes. So we attach all of those mistakes to us. So slowly you need to balance this out with the idea that you're not the mind, but you're dealing with the mind which has all of these problems. And as Swami would beautifully say, that when this attitude starts coming in, you will start treating your mind like a disobedient child, right? And that is one of the best ways to treat your mind. When you start looking at your mind as a distinct entity, like a disobedient child, as I said, you will start treating it with a mixture of strictness, a mixture of love, a mixture of patience, and that would be the best way to approach it. So you need to take responsibility for your mistakes. At the same time, you kind of detach yourself from that mistake and you start looking at it as something that needs to be dealt with, not necessarily something which defines you, right? Secondly, Swami would say that, you know, if you don't like these thoughts, this is again a point which where the spiritual understanding comes in. I think I've mentioned this in other programs. When one of the students asked Swami, when Swami would say that you have any questions, the student asked a question about, Swami, I lose my temper very often. What am I supposed to do? And Swami replied in one word. Swami said separation, right? Swami said separation, but this boy heard it as suppression. So he thought that Swami is telling him to suppress the anger. So he said, Swami, suppression? Swami said, not suppression, separation. When that thought comes, tell yourself that you are not that thought. You are not that anger. That separation is important. I think this is the spiritual perspective bringing into the problem. And Swami would often say this, you know, when we were students, Swami would say that, do you have any questions? We were all youngsters, we were all teenagers. Invariably the question which would come up would be about the mind having all kinds of bad thoughts, you know, lustful thoughts or whatever they are. So when we put this to Swami, on many occasions Swami would say this, Swami would ask, do you like those thoughts, Right? When you say that, Swami, I'm having all these lustful, dirty thoughts. Swami would say, do you like these thoughts? And the students would say, no, Swami, I don't like these thoughts. That's why I'm trying to tell it to you and say that I need to get rid of it. Then Swami would immediately say that if you don't like it, why are you holding it? Why don't you give it to me? Why don't you offer it to me? And Swami would say that that is one of the best ways to deal with the flaws in the mind. Every time we make a mistake, every time we're driven to doing something which is wrong, Swami would say, can you just offer it to me? Can you say that, Swami, I'm getting this bad thought. Swami, I'm getting this bad intention. Swami, I'm getting angry with this person. Swami, I'm getting impatient. Swami, I'm getting, harmful thoughts against such and such a person. Swami would say, just take it and imagine that you're throwing it at the fire that Swami is. And Swami would say that I'm the fire and I will burn it. Right? So this is something which is a very, very practical thing which can be consciously practiced. I recall another old student explaining that Swami once pointed out that he had done something out of arrogance, ego. You know, Swami had given him something special and there was a rise of ego in him, and Swami pointed out, you know, you're becoming egoistic. So this boy literally caught Swami's feet and he said, Swami, yes, I know this is the problem, but I don't know what to do. And Swami said, give it to me. Just offer it to me. Every time this feeling of ego arises, the feeling of pride arises, Swami said, just say, Saishwara Arpanamastu, and give it to me. So this is probably a very practical thing to do. And this you can do only when you start detaching yourself from the mind and you start seeing these flaws in the mind and you start treating your mind as a separate entity, right? So these are the different ways you can do. Probably I'll just quickly summarize whatever I've said. To start with, that feeling of guilt when it comes, when we start seeing ourselves in the light of Swami's expectations. This is the first step in the transformation, and it's actually a very welcome thing from Swami's point of view. Because it is very easy for us to judge ourselves on the basis of the people around us, right? When we are living in the society, nobody's going to tell us that we're eating non-vegetarian food is wrong. Nobody's going to come and tell us that, you know, taking a drink of alcohol is wrong. Because everybody is doing that. Everybody is in a state of lowered morality. So when we look at ourselves in the light of their expectations and their morals, we would appear like very good people. But what we need to do as devotees, the first step is to start looking at ourselves at the light of Swami's expectations. And when we do that, invariably there will be a certain amount of guilt, certain amount of self-criticism and unhappiness with ourselves. So that is the first step. In a sense, it is a sattvic emotion, though it is anger and frustration. It is sattvic anger, as Swami would say. Only thing we need to ensure is we need to make sure that this anger allows us to progress and does not make us negative or does not make us give up, right? So that is something you need to keep in mind. And having said that, the thing that you need to keep in mind is that even this feeling that I'm doing something wrong comes out of the fact that it is the ego attaching itself now to what you see as the bad personality. Earlier it was attached to the good personality, now it is attached to the bad personality, which you're seeing in a new light now. So in a sense, the progress there is to start detaching yourself from the personality, start detaching yourself from the mind, and start treating the mind like a disobedient and mischievous child. And Swami would say that there are many ways of doing that. You know, sometimes when the mind wants to indulge in something, Swami says, ignore it, right? Stop that thought from coming from the level of thought to the action. That is the first step. Don't worry about the feeling that the thought is arising, because many times we don't have control over the spontaneous thoughts they come, but we have complete control over stopping those thoughts from expressing in actions. So to start with, just concentrate on stopping those things at the level of the thought. Don't allow them to express in actions. And Swami would say that, you know, sometimes the mind is very, very restless. You observe it. The moment you start observing your mind, the moment you start observing your thoughts, then you'd find that the mind starts calming down. You know, even in physics, we talk about that observer effect. Once you start observing an entity, the entity's behavior changes. And that's so true for the mind too. So all of this can be done when you start detaching yourself from the mind and you start looking at the mind as having these flaws, and these have to be dealt with. Finally, I know, as I said, I can completely relate to this feeling of saying that, oh Swami, I'm failing so many times, I'm falling so many times, I'm so useless, I'm not able to follow what you're saying. One thing which Swami would always say is, The slow change is what will be permanent. That change which comes overnight is very fragile. It's very, it could evaporate as soon as it has come. So that change which comes slowly is the change which will become permanent. And many times these changes come in so slowly that you don't realize that the change has come. I don't know what exactly is the problem that you're mentioning, but you will realize that over a period of time, you will suddenly look at yourself and you will see that the quality which you have striving for so long has already come. There will be a situation when you will look at yourself and say that, oh, I didn't realize that I've learnt it. I didn't realize that I've imbibed this. And that is what will happen. And when it happens, it will really pleasantly surprise you. Finally, to end with, I'd like to tell something which one of the devotees once shared with me. I found that very, very profound. He said, he was playing on this statement that Swami would say, that when you take a step towards me, I will take 10 steps towards you, right? That's something which Swami would often say. And many times people feel very frustrated. And Swami would say that, you know, when you take the first step of taking on some sadhana or taking on some particular vow, Swami will give you the courage, Swami will give you the enthusiasm to stick to that, Swami will help you stand by that. And many people will wonder that, you know, I'm starting something and I'm failing every time. Where is Swami's support? Where is Swami's encouragement that he promised? So this person had told me that Swami has promised that for every step that you take, I will take 10 steps closer to you. And he said it is absolutely true. There is no doubt about that. But there is something which is unsaid in that statement, which is the 10 steps that Swami takes most often are silent steps. You take one step towards Swami, Swami will take 10 steps silently towards you, which means you will not know that you are actually much closer to Swami than you realize that you are. Because you are looking only at that one step that you've taken, but you don't see that 10 steps which has already been taken on the other side. And Swami, and this person said, you know, that's the challenge. Swami takes 10 silent steps and looks at you and asks, will you still take the second step, not knowing that I've taken 10 steps closer to you? And I think that is the challenge. When we don't see the improvement in us, when we don't see the change in us as much as we would like to do, as much as we would like to offer to Swami, but still say that, Swami, I'm still trying, I will still try, and I will make this effort define my path, not my failures define my path. I think that's what we need to do. And one day, as you're taking these one steps, the Lord is going to keep taking silent steps from that side, and much sooner than you actually realize. It's not a linear curve. It's not like a standard extrapolation of the curve. You will one day find that there is so much change that has happened without your knowledge. So more than anything else, when we live in Swami's presence, as that beautiful quote goes, when you live with God, it's endless hope, right? You need to be absolutely hopeful at every situation, because when we are trying to transform ourselves, when we say that, Swami, I would like to change, and we make that prayer, as Swami said, you start offering all the flaws in you to Swami, you are getting into a partnership with Swami to change yourself. And you and I can be 100% failures, but when in partnership with Swami, be sure that success is assured, right? So even if all your efforts fail, even if all your attempts fail, you are in partnership with Swami and His efforts will never fail. So have that hope always. Keep trying. And I would only tell you that this is not something which is absolutely unique to you. A lot of devotees go through this. A lot of students go through this. And many times I feel that, hold on to that attitude. Hold on to that feeling that, Swami, I'm not able to live up to you. Swami, I'm not able to please you. If you're very, very upset with yourself, very, very angry with yourself, don't let that go. Hold on to that and ensure that that anger literally becomes that warmth which is going to ripen this fruit, the heart within you. And that's all I'd like to tell you. Thank you, brother, for this question. I do hope I've given you some encouragement to hold on to your path and not get too disappointed with yourself. If you have anything more to ask, you can always write to me at prem@radioswami.org. So that, dear listeners, brings me to the end of this week's episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. We started late, so we're ending late. I don't have anything more to say after that answer because, as I said, we started late. But if you have a question on practical spirituality, if you have a question that you would like me to feature on this program, you can always write to me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. This is my personal mail ID. The mails that you send to me will be absolutely confidential. And like today's questioner, if you feel that you need to be anonymous, then you do let me know. I can play your question and I can try to answer yours without mentioning your name. So once again, a very, very big thank you to all of you listeners who've been sending questions, feedback, encouragement and kind words to me for this program and for all the other programs. We're celebrating the 5th year of Thursday Live. So once again, we most humbly and gratefully offer all of our efforts at Swami's Lotus Feet for giving us this beautiful opportunity to connect with all of you. As always, I'm going to leave you with another beautiful song, a song which I like, and I hope with the hope that you all like it too. On the other end of the song, I'm going to be playing Raghu's segment of the Ashtotram, and I'll be back at 12:30 with Arvind for the Radio Afternoon Satsang. But next week at 11, I'll meet you again for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth.
Bhavayami Gopalabalam Manasevitam Tatpadam Chintayeyam Sadaa. Bhavayami Gopalabalam Manasevitam Tatpadam Chintayeyam Sadaa. Sevitam tatpadam chintayeyam sada bhavayami gopalabalam manasevitam tatpadam chintayeyam sada bhavayami gopalabalam manasevitam tatpadam chintayeyam. Ghati ghatita mekhala gachita mani kandita. Ghati ghatita mekhala gachita mani kandita. Ghati ghatita mekhala gachitamani kandita. Vadalanina dena vibraja manam. Ghati ghatita mekhala gachitamani kandita. Vadalanina dena vibraja manam. Niratakala kalita navaneetam. పదం నిరత కళాగలిత నవనీతం బ్రహ్మాది సురనికర భావన శోభిత పదం తిరువేంకటాచల స్థితం పదం చే